Hi, this is Linda Popke, and welcome to our teleseminar on Other People's Money, Strategic Partnering for Growth. I'm president of Leverage to Market Associates, and I'm very pleased to be here today talking with you about how you can build your business through strategic partnering, or how to use other people's money to help your business grow. Now, here's what we'll be talking about today. We're going to talk about key types of partners, and including some that are strategic and some that are not. How to evaluate what partners make sense for a small business or a professional services firm, and then the seven factors to consider when choosing a strategic partner. So let's get started. Let's talk first about what is partnering. Partnering is working with another organization to provide incremental value beyond what each of you can provide yourself. So that's my definition of partnering. I'm sure there are many other definitions as well. But for our purposes today, partnering, again, is working with another organization or individual so that you can provide additional incremental value beyond what either of you could provide by yourself. Now, why would you want to partner with someone else? Well, first of all, it allows you to go places where you couldn't go before. Either you didn't have the contacts, you don't have the credibility, perhaps you don't have the expertise in a particular marketplace or industry, or know individuals who are thought leaders or influencers in that industry. Perhaps they want someone that's a little bigger or a little bit more established. So working with a partner lets you go places where you couldn't go before. It also lets you collaborate with other smart people. And presuming that you're fairly smart yourselves, which I, of course, know you are, you want to work with other people. You want to maybe bounce ideas off of them. Maybe you want to collaborate to create some new intellectual property or just work with other people or firms that are doing well and that you want to be associated with. And that brings us to the next reason why partnering is valuable, which is that it does bring you the aura of success by associating with successful firms. So when you partner with individuals or firms, you want to be partnering with people that have a good name, that are going to bring cachet to you and to your business, as opposed to sometimes you may want to partner with people who are not as well known for strategic reasons, but you do want to make sure that that you're getting your name associated with individuals and firms that are really representing the type of image you want in the marketplace. Now, partnering, again, allows you to attract different clients, perhaps bigger projects that you couldn't do without the strategic partner. Again, perhaps they have an expertise in a specific area that you don't have. It allows you to learn new things by working with someone who has a little bit different expertise or different experience. You can whether add additional services or learn what they do and how that relates to what you do on a daily basis. The other thing that partnering does is it allows you to support your existing clients or customers when they ask you for additional functionality. So you've got a relationship with an existing set of clients. Things are going well. They ask you for something that's a little bit outside your scope of normal performance, what you normally do for them, and you don't feel comfortable taking that on totally by yourself. So you partner with someone else who perhaps has that specific experience, and then what you can do is provide that under the umbrella of your brand name and your firm and still support the client without either walking away from it or perhaps trying to do something that you aren't going to be as good at delivering as you might like. So lots of good reasons to partner with other firms. Now, why is it important to think before you leap in here? Well, that sounds great. Let's just go find someone and partner with them. Now, according to a partner specialist, Phoenix Consulting Group, nearly 50% of all alliances fell short of expectations in 2009. So nearly half of all alliances didn't quite have the results that their partners and participants in the alliance thought that might happen. And so I thought it might be worth a moment to spend a moment here to say, why did that happen? And clearly there are probably some reasons. Perhaps there were unrealistic expectations. Both parties thought that things were going to be better than they turned out to be. Certainly in 2009, we still were reeling from the economic recession, so perhaps the economy had something to do with that. There wasn't as much business as perhaps these individuals or firms thought might be when they decided to partner. But on top of that, there probably is is a factor that I see very often with partnerships, which is that the roles are not necessarily clear. So all of the parties to the partnership aren't always clear up front as to who does what to whom, what happens when things don't go perfectly well, what happens when things do go well, and then what happens when things go so well that it's beyond your expectations, and where do you go from there? And the other thing that I see as a failure to partnerships is that the groundwork hasn't been done in advance to establish good, solid partner relationships. So we see something, we say, this looks like a great opportunity, let's jump in. We all jump in the pool here, and we haven't really figured out if this is the right place for us, or even whether our partner knows how to swim, or if we can swim well together. So those are some of the reasons that I see alliances and partnerships are not as successful as they were hoped to be. So that's one reason why it really makes sense to spend a few moments and figure out what it is you're going to be partnering on, and what are some of the rules, again, as to what makes sense in terms of choosing partners and how to really focus on strategic partnering. Now, I'm going to talk today about all kinds of partners and just strategic partnering. And so we'll talk about the difference between just partnering in general and what we consider strategic. Now, there are various types of partners. You may find that there are formal partnerships, which have legal agreements, and informal alliances, which are kind of ad hoc arrangements. We come together when it makes sense. We don't have a legal relationship to each other in writing, but it's more informal. And I'm going to talk for a moment about why some of the informal alliances may work at times, but when there's money on the table, you do want to formalize this, and it's a good reason to do so. Let's talk about the specific types of partners, and this isn't comprehensive by any means, but it relates to what I think is relevant for small businesses and consulting firms. So first of all, we have what we call a joint alliance, where we have equal partners. Two parties, maybe three parties come together, and each of them is represented equally in this partnership. And so they may be working together on a project. They may have a more formal relationship over a period of time, but each party is seen as bringing about the same level of value and responsibility to the partnership. Another type of partnership is more of a subcontractor-prime relationship, where perhaps one entity is in control of the relationship, and they bring someone else in to do some of the work, deliver some of the projects or services that are required. But really, the subcontractor may at times even be totally invisible to the client or customer. Then we have distribution partners, and these are companies that take a product or service from a company that creates it and provide that that service to the marketplace. And certainly we've had this for years and years in retail and computers, and now we have it on the web as well. But anytime you walk into a supermarket, you're unlikely to be buying the food directly from Safeway or Whole Foods or whoever else is providing it, but you're providing it. Safeway has actually they're not producing the food themselves, but they're not buying it necessarily from the manufacturer. They may be buying it from a distributor. So they're the ones that are distributing the product. In the computer space, we've had value-added resellers for a number of years. We're now seeing partners that take and rebrand a product or service on the web and sell that. So there are a lot of different ways that these particular types of partners distribute the product or service from the manufacturer or provider and actually interface with the customer. Another type of partner is technology partners, where someone provides a technology or a specific type of service to another entity, which then takes that and incorporates it in their product. And if you think about just a very simple one, when we buy PCs and we get an operating system, the operating system comes usually Windows from Microsoft, and that comes with the PC, even though the PC itself doesn't come from Microsoft. Another example of technology being integrated and what we call OEM'd or made by an original equipment manufacturer into a product is if you're buying a cell phone. Most cell phones in the U.S. have a technology created by Qualcomm. Qualcomm themselves doesn't make a cell phone, neither do they sell cell phones, but whatever phone you buy has that type of technology which allows it to communicate. So those are technology partners. Another type of partner is a partner that provides a referral to you or a recommendation, but doesn't necessarily become involved in the process. So, for example, if you work in an accounting firm and you're a lawyer, you may be providing, as you provide legal services and you find that someone needs accounting, CPA, tax services, you partner with a CPA firm and you say, this is our provider that we recommend, but you're actually just having a kind of hands-off type of relationship. You're not taking in the money from the client for the CPA services. They're not paying you. You have this referral relationship together. Now, here's what's interesting, and we'll talk about this in a moment. Anytime you use the word partner, it has some legal implications. So you may want to talk about working together with someone, about having an alliance, but where there isn't a legal contract between the two of you, you have to be very careful about talking about your partners. Now, let's talk about evaluating when partners make sense, particularly for strategic partnering. And what I mean by strategic partnering is not about the subcontracting types of things. So even though it may work very effectively for your business to either bring in subcontractors to deliver on projects or to actually be a subcontractor for someone else, very important relationship that you have, that's not as much of a strategic relationship because it really is that you're the hired hand. Now, you can still work with another firm, and you may not have the visibility to the client directly, but it's more of a strategic relationship because of what you're providing. So, again, there's a difference between a subcontracting, perhaps an hourly rate type of thing that says, provide me with this commodity or this type of service, and I will take that and represent it to the client, and actually partnering and actually strategizing and becoming part of the whole process. So let's talk about the let's talk about how you evaluate when partners make sense. And the first is to go back to my definition of partnering, which is to say, is there extra value provided because of this agreement? So because of the fact that we are working together, is there additional value that we provide to our client? Is there additional value that we provide perhaps to ourselves in terms of this expands our services? But what is happening here that's different? And if there isn't, then why are we considering partnering with this individual? One of the reasons to look at partnerships is added capabilities. And this can fall into a number of categories. The first is capacity. We don't have the ability to stretch and to take on an incremental project or this incremental work. So if we partner with someone else, we'll have additional capacity to do that. The second is technology. We don't have the technical expertise. We don't have the actual technology products. So therefore, we're going to partner with someone else who's going to provide that for us. Third is expertise in general. And even within a specific area, I will partner, for example, with other marketing firms, marketing consultants, who need my specific expertise in the project that they're doing with a client. So there may be something that I do very well. There may be something that you do very well. And that, in general, someone else may only need on a partial basis. So usually the difference between when to do this in the partnering and when to set up something as the partnering firm, when you would want to do this as and perhaps hire someone full-time, is when you need this just once in a while. So this is not what you do every day, but someone has a specific request for you, and you need to kind of rent the expertise rather than buying it. Another reason to partner is for finance or funding capabilities. So either the entity you're partnering with has additional incremental resources in terms of funding, or together you can get those. And so that's another reason that you may want to consider partnering with this organization. Exposure to new clients. Perhaps they have a client roster or a list of customers that's very different from where you've been and maybe where you want to be. Also, ability to get into new areas of practice. So, again, this may be something that you're looking to expand into. You don't necessarily have either the expertise or the experience in that area, but working together with another partner, another entity, you can learn some of this, you can establish yourself, and that gets to the next one, which is credibility. In a particular market or particular area, there is someone that's very credible, that has a reputation, and it makes sense for you to partner with them because that also enhances your own credibility. Another reason we'll talk about in a moment, a little bit differently, is to provide additional geographic capabilities. You may be located in one area of the U.S., And you want to have feet on the ground, so to speak. If you're in the West Coast, you want to have feet on the ground in New York City. And so you partner with someone else who can provide that. Very often we see that happen with training projects. So if, for example, we're rolling out a series of training seminars that need to be in-person stand-up training and the firm is located in one area, perhaps there's just the travel requirements or the ability to be on-site in certain geographic areas is very limiting. Therefore, what we'll do is see people partner with individuals who will be able to support the local clients, provide the training, et cetera. Another area we'll talk about in a few moments is related to international distribution or international presence. And very often firms will partner with a local company that understands the market, speaks the local language, is licensed through the local government entities, and provides additional capability that way. Finally, again, a partner, another reason to partner is when they provide support in a complementary area to yours. Something that is somewhat related, clients may see that the two of you as being similar, but it expands what you do just a little bit. Now, when does it not make sense to partner? And I think there's a number of reasons, some of which have to do with kind of a strategic level and some of which have to do with just a gut feel. What I have found in my experience, and I've seen this from others, it does not make sense to choose a partner because you like those people or you think you may well work together and then spend a lot of time developing a methodology, creating a new way of approaching a market, and then go out and looking for clients. That's kind of putting the cart before the horse. You may have wonderful methodology. You may have great stuff. But if there isn't a business need or a market need for what you do together in this partnered entity, then don't go out and spend a lot of time with that. And I've done this myself, and I've seen other people do that as well. It sounds like what you have is wonderful. You really think you're building value here. But the bottom line is no one has come and asked you for that particular set of services and programs. Therefore, you invest the time and effort to create this. You've got this methodology, which you then want to sell and actually get some revenue back from the client. But no one is necessarily looking for that specifically. And so that becomes really a waste of time and very frustrating to the entities involved. Another reason not to partner is less strategic and more just gut feel, which is when the individual or the entity doesn't feel right. So you may have gone through all of those other aspects above, and I'm going to give you seven more factors to consider about choosing a partner, but you just don't feel right. Everything looks good on paper. Everything sounds right. Whether it's a style, the way that you work versus the other firm, whether it's a personality type of conflict, whether it's just something doesn't feel right, if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. This has been my experience in general throughout life. If something feels wrong and you go against it, your head says go ahead, but your heart says no, and your gut says no, follow the gut because you will regret it later on, even if you can't put your finger on it right away. The other thing, too, is sometimes, even though, again, everything seems perfectly right, there's just something that's different about the way they approach things. There's something that you just aren't sure whether or not the styles will mesh, et cetera. So just be careful and spend a little more time perhaps watching and waiting and not pull them into a partnership too early. So now let's spend a moment talking about seven factors to consider when choosing a strategic partner. And the first one, is there business available? So as I mentioned before, rather than starting from a methodology, don't get ahead of yourself. Is there business out there that the two of you or the three of you, sometimes there are multiple entities will partner together, can go ahead and get? Is there a problem for a client or a company or a customer that's out there that together you can solve? And so don't move into this because it sounds like a good thing to do, and it's something you've always wanted to partner with someone, but is there real business available? Second thing to consider is how much of the partnership will show publicly or to the client or customer. So how transparent do you want to be with the relationship to the client? Now, again, as I mentioned in the subcontracting, prime and subcontractor type of arrangement, usually the subcontractor is totally hidden from the client. The client may never know they exist. However, even in a strategic partnering, sometimes the individual will come in as a as a representative of the other partnering entity that has the brought the business together. So sometimes it will appear as if you are working with them. They brought you in under their name. Sometimes you'll say, hey, this is this new group we've put together, and we're both involved. Sometimes the client wants to know these things. Sometimes they don't. And so that's something that you have some leeway on, but you need to agree in front, or up front rather, so that the individuals involved actually represent themselves appropriately. So that's something to consider. How much of this will be transparent in terms of relating to the client? Next, what are the responsibilities of each party, both legally and financially? So legally, how much are you committed? Do you have a relationship that says a certain amount of resource will be put on this project in a certain period? Are you legally going to be responsible if one party makes a commitment and reneges? Is the other party then legally responsible? So you need to understand that. My suggestion is when there is money involved, that there should be some kind of legal agreement, even if it's a very short, doesn't have to be pages and pages, but obviously you will want to consult a legal advisor and be sure that you are not then becoming a party to and responsible for anything that the other partner does and doesn't do correctly. Financially, who is responsible? Perhaps there's an investment in resources, in inventory, something that has to be brought to the table before you can actually start to see revenue from the partnership. Are both sides financially equally committed to this? Is one party going to take on certain of that in return for the other party providing perhaps more of a service capability? What happens if the partnership is not making money and there has to be some kind of additional financial investment? So all of that needs to be thought about. Second, if you're going to have this on an ongoing basis and you really want to be going out and soliciting clients, who's responsible for that? Who's responsible for what I'll call rainmaking? Who's responsible for going and finding the clients for this particular set of services? And again, as I'd mentioned before, I would recommend starting with having business rather than saying, let's just go find some. But once you've got this entity together, how are you then going to go out and get new business for your partnered relationship? Then next is who's driving the client relationship? And usually it makes sense in most cases to have one party who is really responsible for client relations. Who is doing that? And how much does the other party have involved in terms of client-facing contact? So do we say party one is really driving the relationship, they've brought the client, but you'll also be talking to party number two and perhaps party number three as time goes by. But if you have any main client issues, talk to us. We came in here first, or we're the one you know to start with. So who is driving the client relationship? What happens if that individual or entity isn't around? What happens if there are issues between them and the client or customer? How are those resolved? Next is who closes the business? So you may have been brought in by someone into a new client or prospect, but who is responsible for really getting the business and closing the deal, getting the signature on paper, so to speak? Is that the same person? Even though the first party may have a client and say there's a need, let's partner with someone, one of the reasons they may partner with someone else is because they aren't able to close the business themselves. So the second party may be responsible for that. But it's very important, and I have personally seen relationships where a number of people partnered to put together a set of services. Any one of these individuals could have delivered all these services. There was a lot of attention being given to demand generation. But one of the reasons this entire arrangement didn't work is no one within the organization felt qualified to go out and do the closing. Everybody expected the other parties to the partnership to be the ones that would actually close the business. And as a result, not much business closed, and this particular arrangement didn't work. So who's going to close the business? The next one is, how is compensation going to be determined? So you have a partnership. You have some money that will be coming in. How are you going to determine who gets what percentage of that? Is it by the person who brings the client? So one particular entity has the client to start with. Therefore, they're going to get more of of the financial remunerations? Is it by who does the work? So even though it's my client, I'm bringing you in and you're going to be doing about 80% of the project, so therefore I'm going to give you 70-80% of the compensation. Is it a predetermined formula? So it's important to understand that in advance and say, how will we divide up the compensation? Now, again, I'm presuming that we're talking a little bit here about, even though these may be there may be some agreements you have, we're not talking about a legal partnership like an LLC here. But we're talking about strategically coming together, might be over a period of time. So in an LLC, you would have strict roles that would be set up regarding compensation and who owned what percentage of the partnership. But we're talking about this more in terms of a strategic level and something that is not an ongoing long-term entity. Finally is be clear on the payment terms. So who owes what to whom, and when is this owed? So who the client would pay whom within this arrangement, and then the what would be the arrangement in terms of payment terms for one partner to ensure that the second partner is compensated fairly, and when would that happen? And I've seen partnerships fall by the wayside because some of these details, it was presumed, even the percentage or the amount of dollars transferred was agreed upon, but the details of when this would be, is it by a certain date, by a certain milestone, after receiving payment from a client? So all of that is very, very important to clarify. So let me just kind of summarize this quickly. The seven factors, is there business available? Second, how much of the partnership will show publicly? Three, what are the responsibilities of each party, both legally and financially? Fourth, who is responsible for generating new business or rainmaking? Fifth, who is responsible for driving the client relationship? Sixth, who closes the business? And then how is the compensation determined? The seventh would be how is the compensation determined? And what are the payment terms? So how is that all kind of put together? So seven factors very important to consider when partnering. Now, I talked about the legal ramifications of saying the word partner. Sandy Shepard, who is a colleague of mine who specializes in legal services for small businesses, says to me, make sure you tell them that they need to have an agreement signed in writing or they'll be sorry. She's often seen strategic partnerships go bad, and the person who wound up with the short end of the stick really didn't realize what they were being committed to until everything went downhill. So be sure you have a clear document and agreement in place. Again, I would suggest making sure that you engage not to spend hours and hours creating long, extended legal agreements, but to make sure that you understand what you are committed to and what you could be caught up with if things don't go well. Understand things like confidentiality. There may be non-disclosure agreements that have to be put together. Understand conflict of interest. What happens if you have a client and the other partner has a client and those two are directly competitive, or there may be things that might not work well if information was shared across the two partners. So understand where things are together and to be shared, where things are to be kept separately. Understand your responsibilities to each other. Be clear about your commitments to each other and to the partnership, and then be sure each partner carries their weight. So as you get through this, and this is certainly not something you can put together in a legal document, but this is where that gut feel of feel good working with this person, be sure that you're clear as to what your expectations are of the partner, and that as time goes by, that those expectations are being fulfilled. Excuse me, I'm still fighting a cold here. Okay, now when others want to partner with you, let's spend a moment talking about that. You want to know what you want from people who are interested in partnering with you. So what is it your expectations are? Is this something that's a one-time service? Is it an expertise? Is it a particular set of contacts within an industry? So be clear on what you want from the partner. Know the characteristics that will be required to make that partner successful. And that depends very much on your business and how you do business. So, for example, you may need someone who is available nights and weekends and can be very responsive to client requests on short demands. You may need to have someone who has a specific technology experience or expertise rather, working with the web, working with developing software, perhaps building iPhone apps, etc. So there may be certain things you need. You may need someone who is very cost efficient in this area. You may need someone who is more strategic. You may need someone you can put in front of a client and can speak very effectively and represent you well. So understand what are the characteristics that you expect to make this partnership successful. Be clear as to your expectations. So starting with, say, this is what we expect of you. Here's what we expect of ourselves and what we expect of the partnership together. Screen the candidates thoroughly. This is very, very important. You may have had someone recommended. You may have someone that you've met. But be sure to find out more about them. And the best thing to do is in my estimation, is to ask around, not just ask them for references, because we all ask for references, we're going to give our best references, but to ask other people who may know them. Have you ever worked with so-and-so? What's it like? What was their relationship? How do people feel about them in the industry? Certainly check out their website, do a Google search, start to see what you can find about them online. So do some screening besides actually interviewing them yourselves and find out a little bit more about them in advance. Then you may want to set up a trial period that you work together, and this is depending on your need and the projects that you have. I consider this dating before marriage. So how do you relate together? Do you work well together? Is everything working the way you think it should? So let's have a period of time where we work together. Have frequent check-ins to gauge how things are going. So make sure that you're checking in. You're not just kind of throwing the partner into a project and walking away, but you have your part, they have their part. Let's check in and make sure that that things are working together. Excuse me, I'm reminded of the two groups that were building the cross-continental railway in the 1800s. One started on the east, one started on the west. When they came together, were those rails going to be in position, or were they going to be miles off from where they needed to be? So you need to make sure that you can adjust your trajectory a bit to come together with your other partner. The other thing is it's okay to get divorced. So from a partner perspective, be wary of the long-term damage that happens when a partnership isn't working out. For some reason, and it could be that things have been going well, there may be other commitments, there may be other directions that one partner is moving in. It may not make sense to continue to partner with them moving forward. So rather than continue this because you've always done it before, because you made a commitment to start with to work with this individual partner, think about what's going to happen and how you can dissolve this relationship. Is there a process to walk away? Is there a process to partner with someone else if necessary? What's the right thing to do? And again, it's okay to grow apart. The reason for partnering may change. It may go away. So there are all kinds of reasons that you may decide to partner with a firm or an individual. And again, there are reasons where you may say, look, we've done this for a while. This is just isn't working right now. And let's look for someone else, or let's perhaps grow our own services directly. Now, we talked about this as other people's money. And there are different ways that strategic partnering can help you get other people's money. One is that it helps you get clients' money because you're able to offer services you didn't before. The second is that the partner brings you into places where you couldn't be before. And the third is when you're partnering with a larger entity, for example, if you are a software developer and you were working with Salesforce and you were in Salesforce.com's developer community, you would get a lot of the cachet and a lot of the credibility and a lot of promotion by being involved with someone bigger. So all of these are different ways that you can be partnering with someone. Something else you can do is we mentioned geographical expansion, particularly international. In some geographies, it really does make sense to have a local partner. The local partner knows the environment. They may have credibility. They may have a name brand in that local area. They may be providing feet on the street, a local entity. From just a tax perspective, from a governmental perspective, it may make sense. In some countries, you absolutely cannot just go in and start selling or delivering services without some kind of local entity both in terms of business licenses and taxes and regulations, et cetera. So be careful to research your partners very carefully in going into other geographies. There are companies who can help you find local partners around the world, depending on the business that you're going into. And you definitely want to, this is a place where you absolutely want to check references. You want to make sure that you understand the ethics of the company and just how they work, not necessarily ethically or morally, but the process that they're going to go about things, how they've worked with other companies. One possibility is to work with multinational companies who then work with local companies. So that's something you can do as well. You also want to use your international partners can help with translation. They can help with localization. Again, they may understand the culture in the area that you're going into better than someone coming in from another geography. All very, very important. The other thing you can do is you can help partner with companies that want to come to the U.S. So you can help companies from other countries who want to come to this country and do business here. They need to understand their expertise in their market. You need to understand both their market and the U.S. equivalent. So what are they doing overseas? How have they been successful in their home country or other countries? And how is that market different or similar to what's happening in the U.S.? So another way to strategically partner is to work with someone from outside the U.S. to help them bring their business here and perhaps represent them or be their face, their feet on the street in the U.S. You need to understand the legal complications. There are certainly various countries and certain technologies that are restricted both in coming into the U.S. And going out to these other countries, so be clear you understand that. But you can help foreign companies set up local offices, and you can also be the voice of the U.S. consumer. So as someone is coming here and saying, I'm not sure if I understand, will Americans use our product or service the same way that we found in our other countries? You can come here. You can help connect people to the right individuals, help them build a business here. So that's another way. We think very often of partnering from an international perspective of going into other countries, but you can also partner with companies from other countries who'd like to come here. Now, I'd like to spend a moment talking about how you market a partnership. Presuming that you've got this partnership, you've gone through the due diligence, you have a client, you have a business opportunity, you have someone, you've done all the arrangements, you know who's going to do what to whom, you know how to work together. So how are you going to market this? And there are a couple of things to think of. First is generating leads. And so what you want to do is be able to, if this is something that is going to be a separate entity from partner A and partner B, each have their own businesses, you want to consider how you're going to represent this. What is the value proposition? What makes this unique? How does this relate to your existing business, and how will you position this? Is this an additional offering? Is it something you're not even going to discuss? It's going to be a separate entity by itself. How will you let people know? Who will be responsible for going out and doing the lead generation and driving sales? So think about that in terms of a marketing perspective. You also want to think about the intellectual property that perhaps you want to create together. Perhaps there's some articles, perhaps there's something you invent. And again, considering that you've already handled the legal implications of who owns what, but how will you go out and market this? Is this something that you'll publish? Is it something that you'll have available to both partners to discuss? Is it something that you want to be creating a buzz around, whether on a blog or social media? Will you be presenting it at conferences? So think about this in terms of is there something new that's going to come out of this, and how can we take that and use that to market both the partnership and then perhaps the individual entities as well? How do you want to represent yourself? As I mentioned earlier, you can have a case very often where there is one entity, one party to a partnership that owns the relationship with a client, and therefore they become the representative, and the other partners kind of come along for the ride, so to speak. Sometimes you'll say we have a very loose alliance. We have parties A, B, C, and D, and we're all going to be working together to represent you here and to fulfill the needs that you have. And then the third is to create a combined entity. And we have A and B and C. We create an entity we call ABC Partners, and that exists to fulfill the partnership. And, again, I'm not talking from a legal perspective because you'll have to do that as well. but also from a marketing perspective, that you talk about A, B, and C, coming together as ABC partners, and here's the different expertise that we provide. Here's what you get from this entity coming together. You'll find this very often with larger companies that are collaborating on a big deal. You'll find a kind of an official alliance, or you'll find some kind of initiative that's put together, and they'll create something with a different name so that it's clear that this is related to what's being done as a partner versus where you're working with us individually. So you need to understand what kind of visibility you want to give that, how much you want to position that, and then all of the rules of how you market yourself apply to this partnership or entity as well. Now let's talk about partnering with other bigger companies. Again, using other people's money. And I mentioned this a moment ago, that you can become an official partner of a larger organization, such as a developer group. I mentioned Salesforce.com, becoming a software partner there. Certainly, if you were creating apps for the iPhone or the iPad, you become part of the Apple partner community. If you're creating it for Google, you become part of the Droid community, et cetera. So there is a way to partner and to get the advantages that come to being associated with someone as successful as Apple or Google or Salesforce or whatever. There are online communities that you can join as part of an official partner. Again, and not necessarily just a developer, but sometimes you'd be representing a larger organization. And so there are things that you can do there. And certainly when it's hardware, software, systems, internet, et cetera, there are ways that you can start to take advantage of some of the marketing and promotion and reputation that the bigger company has. You can also become affiliated with companies. Like, for example, Amazon creates affiliates, and the affiliates, not only do they get a bit of a commission on what's sold through them, but they're able to use the Amazon logo and say that they're affiliated with Amazon. And you could create a store. You could be selling in the Amazon marketplace if you were selling those types of goods. You could create that. You could actually find that your products are sold not just by yourself, but through their website and through their channels. And so that's another great way to partner. You don't have to build a channel. You don't have to actually do some of the demand generation. It provides a vehicle for you to have another storefront to get to people. So another thing you can do here, the other thing that's happening with the recent surge in e-books with the Kindle and the Nook and the iPad is that if you had intellectual property that was available, not just as a hardcover book, but as an e-book, for these formats, again, you would be able to leverage all of the work and all of the extensive amount of promotion and dollars that's been put into these platforms and be seen as being associated with them there. So lots of good ways that you can get something from that. You can leverage marketing campaigns and dollars. When you are affiliated and partnered with a larger organization, they will be spending money, and you will be able to perhaps either take their marketing dollars and use them yourself in terms of actually getting some co-op dollars that perhaps where the larger organization says, if you're promoting our products and services and you're one of our partners, our service partners, you can use our logo, you can use our advertising that we create for you, our promotional materials. You may be referenced on websites or listings. So all of that is good ways to really use other people's money to promote the partnership that you're doing here with a larger organization. There also may be ways that you can create your own advertising or marketing programs and reference the fact that you're involved with someone and partnering with someone that has credibility and reputation in the marketplace. And there is definitely goodness by association. So you want to be very careful when choosing your partners to choose someone that you think is going to have staying power, again, beyond all the factors I gave you earlier in terms of feeling good about working with a partner. You want to choose someone that you think will be a longer-term partner if you're going to be doing some type of marketing arrangement with them. So is this who I want to be associated with over time? Do they have the reputation? Will they be here moving forward? becoming involved with where there's a choice of partners, is this the one that I'd like to have my name associated with over a long period of time? Will they help generate leads? In some cases they will, in some cases they won't. It depends on the type of arrangement that you have and, again, how much of their own marketing they are doing that's consumer-facing. There may be some joint sales activities. In some cases, a larger organization will either delegate sales to the partners or they will provide some opportunities where you can sell with them, which is a great way, again, because they're bringing in the individuals, they're bringing in the money in terms of they're spending the money to make this happen. So it's a great, great way to really leverage what another organization is spending anyway for your benefit. And then finally, there are usually ways that you can find yourself listed, whether it's websites as an affiliate, directories, places that you can say, hey, I'm affiliated with this particular organization. This is one of our partners. And a very valuable way to do that, because people will see that, let's say you're a Microsoft partner, you're an Oracle partner, you're an Apple partner, whatever. And that really adds credibility to you. And it also tells people who have a certain expectation. I'm a Cisco partner, I'm certified in this, etc. So they have an expectation of a certain level of training, which may be available through partners, a certain level of experience, certain level of just professionalism, and that can rub off on you. So all of these are very important important things that you can get from working with other bigger companies and helping to use some of the money that they're using. How can you leverage that to help promote you and your organization? So before we finish, I'm going to give you 10 tips for successful partnering. Before I do that, I want to mention another resource. I did mention Phoenix Consulting Group, which is phoenixcg.com, which is an organization that really focuses on partnering and alliances. But another wonderful resource is ASAP, which is the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals, which is a global organization dedicated to alliances and worldwide. They have chapters throughout the U.S. and in other countries. They have a great amount of resources. They have events. And you can find out more about them at www.strategic-alliances.org. So www.strategic-alliances.org for ASAP, or the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals. Now, I'd like to finish with 10 tips for how you can be a successful partner or a more successful partner. The first one is to be very, very clear on your objectives. Are you doing this to get into new business? Are you doing this to leverage a potential opportunity at an existing client? Are you doing this from more of a longer-term perspective? Are you doing this because there are some short-term opportunities you see, because you have an opportunity to get involved with a party who has really got a reputation in the marketplace? So why are you partnering? And if you're clear on that, that will help very much as to determine what some of the next steps might be. Secondly is know what you bring to the party. So you are bringing value to the partnership as well. And it's very, very important that you understand why people want to partner with you. And one of the things we actually haven't discussed very much yet is the value proposition and the positioning that you bring to other parties. We've talked about how you should consider them and how you should evaluate them, but they'll be evaluating you as well. So what is it about you that makes you an attractive partner? And if you go back to all the things that I mentioned earlier about how you should look at partners for attractiveness, other entities are probably looking at you the same way and saying, should we partner with them? Why? And so make sure that all of the types of things that you have a good reputation, you're the type of entity that someone else would want to be associated with. You have expertise, you have a set of experiences, you have perhaps knowledge in a particular industry or market, whatever it is. You have a reputation for working effectively with others. You have the type of organization that can be counted on to support other projects very effectively. So understand what it is you bring to the party and why others would want to partner with you. The third, as we mentioned earlier, get to know who you're partnering with. Get to know them well. Get to understand what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. So you want to know no one is going to be perfect, and there may be areas that you absolutely think are wonderful to partner with a particular entity, And in some areas you say, I wouldn't touch that one with a 10-foot pole. So just be clear and say, this is my partner for X and Y, but not for Z, because for Z, I feel more comfortable going with someone else. So understand who you're partnering with, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, what their challenges are. So, for example, that in a particular time of year, we're not going to be partnering with an accounting firm in the first quarter of the year, because they're going to be doing income taxes, and it's going to be very difficult to get their attention on a longer-term project. We understand that that there may be some times when they're working on a particular client that's not going to make sense for us to get involved with them in a partnership type of basis. So know who you're partnering with. Fourth, don't tie the knot too soon. Spend time getting to know them. Make sure that the analogy that you're dating plenty before you decide to move to the altar and really partner with them. And be sure that what you see and what you think you see is really what you're going to get under the surface. So don't jump in too soon. Make sure, particularly if it's someone that you don't know a lot about, that you do get to see them in various situations and it is an entity that you want to partner with. Fifth, communicate early and often. Kind of like voting in Chicago, do it early, do it often. You cannot, as I have a colleague says, you cannot over-communicate. You have to communicate more and more and more. When in doubt, make sure to err on the side of over-communicating, not under-communicating. So make sure that you're clear, he knows where things stand, and from that point, then you can make decisions in a very informed fashion. So be sure to communicate as effectively as possible. Understand, not every relationship is forever, and it's okay to have partnerships that last for a finite period of time. This is not personal. It's a business relationship, and be clear as to what your expectations are, that after this particular period of time or this project or this client engagement is completed, that that may be the extent of this particular partnership, and that's okay. Be sure to establish processes up front as much as possible. We've talked about some of these, how you're going to do sales generation, how you're going to support the client, how you're going to enable payment, how you're going to represent each other, perhaps how you're going to establish and promote intellectual property. But also around the specifics of a job. Here's a particular project we're going to be working on, and the process is we're going to have this particular set of meetings. Party A will do this, Party B will do that. 3 weeks later, Party A will do something else. So be very clear. The more you can establish who does what and how up front, the less room there is for kind of confusion as you're in the midst of battle, so to speak, and getting something completed. Understand the face that you're going to show the world. So be clear as to whether you're going to say we're partners A and B coming together. This is company B that's representing us, and company A is not really visible. Or we're coming from A and B, and together we're creating C, and that's the organization that's here to support you today. So how are you going to represent yourself, and how does this relate to your other business activities? Be sure each side carries their own weight, and that can be from very specific things like insurance, business licenses, et cetera, to just the amount of work that's done and the fact that you have certain commitments to make, and we need to make sure that you're doing those, and we need to make sure that I am completing my commitments on time and in a reasonable fashion and a good quality as well. So not all of the weight of a true partnership falls onto one party versus the other. There is a division of labor, a division of resources, which is agreed on in advance. And then finally, if the whole doesn't equal more than the sum of the parts, don't do it. If you don't think that there is something that's going to become more valuable as a result of you doing this partnership, whether that would be more business that's available, more capacity, more finances, all of the things that we talked about earlier, then it probably doesn't make sense to become involved in this particular partnership. So let me take a moment and recap those. The 10 tips for successful partnering. First is be very clear on your objectives. Second is know what you bring to the party and what's expected of you in terms of your value proposition for the partnership. Third is to get to know who it is you're partnering with and understand both their strengths and their areas of weakness or improvement that that you don't want to be focused on in terms of working with the client. Fourth is don't tie the knot too soon. Get take the time to really work together and be sure that you know and are clear that this is going to work in this particular engagement. Communicate early and often. Err on the side of over-communicating, not under-communicating. Understand not every relationship is forever, and that's perfectly fine. Establish your processes up front. Be very clear as much as possible as to who's responsible for what and how things will happen. Understand the face that you're going to show the world and agree upon that, and then follow through on that. Be sure each side is carrying their own weight, both in terms of the financial weight and just those types of things, as well as the responsibilities to the project or to the client. And then finally, if the whole doesn't equal more than the sum of the parts, then don't do it, because it means that really you're not, you are investing energy in a partnership, and there has to be more coming out than is going in. So if you're investing the energy and the time and the resources and all you're getting out is just about what you're putting in, then it's a break even, and perhaps there's a better use of that energy somewhere else. So think about that. I have personally had many, many successful, very fruitful, very rewarding partnerships. I've also been involved in some that we won't talk about that were very much a drain on energy and time and resources. So I hope that we've given you some insights over the last hour that will help you choose how to partner more strategically and more effectively. So this is Linda Popke for Leverage to Market Associates, and I want to thank you very much, and I want to wish you great and successful partnering in the future. Thanks very much.